because we're Armageddon Man. Karl Marx predicted our demise, but it's on crisis that we thrive. And if find a new market or a war will do, and we'll see our historic mission through. Well, even though our race is almost run, when we are through, you'll all be done. And what we don't use up will blow away on that Armageddon day. Round the world we're number one. We'll win the war that can't be won. You won't survive it.
Hello, hello, this is Paul Kangas on radio station KPOO in San Francisco, and this is the program Reality Sandwich, the continuing investigation into the CIA assassinations of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, Dorothy Kilgallen, and Lee Bowers, probably one of the most significant people in the Kennedy assassination, Lee Bowers. Let me reiterate who Lee Bowers is. Lee Bowers is the Union Pacific Railroad worker that was watching the John Kennedy motorcade route with binoculars from behind the grassy knoll, the picket fence of the grassy knoll. He was up in a railroad tower about 17 feet above the ground, and he saw a car without a state license plates covered with mud drive into the parking lot at the Union Pacific yard there. Driver. And Bowers saw a puff of smoke or two puffs of smoke from underneath the trees, because he was up inside a building so he couldn't hear the sound, but he saw the puffs of smoke from the rifles of the assassins shooting President John Kennedy. And then he saw the men run from the grassy knoll area over into the train and hide in a gondola car. And then he watched the police chasing after him and searched the area, and he called the police saying, hey, you missed the guys, they're hiding in the gondola car. And the police dispatcher took the message but then didn't relay it to the police. So after three searches of the area, and he was up in the tower watching the whole thing from the railroad tower with binoculars, he realized the guys hiding in the gondola car had been totally missed by the police. Not that they were totally missed, it's the police knew where they were hiding and the police were covering up the assassins. And so Lee Bowers then went over to the police and took them by the hand and led them to the car and helped him climb up to the car and into the car, and then pointed out E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis, and a still unknown third tramp who's believed to be a man named Carswell. And that's how Lee Bowers broke the assassination of John Kennedy. He's the man that first pointed out. And then Jack Beers from the Dallas Morning News came over with a camera and took pictures of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis as they were being arrested and marched away by the Dallas police, only to be let loose by the Dallas police. And that's how we, that's 30 years later, that's all the further we've gotten, because the massive cover-up in this country has gone on so long, and people put their lives on the line to uncover the assassins, like Dorothy Kilgallen, the famous high-class women journalist who interviewed Jack Ruby and broke the story herself, was killed along with her secretary for revealing it. So then Jim Garrison brought the case, and Mark Lane did books, and Michael Canfield and A.J. Weberman did a book, and Oliver Stone did a movie, and that's where we are now. Now, the Oakland Tribune has done a story. You may have heard me talk about it last week. The Oakland Tribune of Sunday, March 21st, 1993, did a powerful story on how U.S. Army intelligence spied on Dr. Martin Luther King's family for 75 years. That apparently Martin Luther King's father was a very well-known radical in his day. Let me read to you some of the article. It goes like this. The intelligence branch of the United States Army spied on the family of Dr. Martin Luther King for three generations. Top secret, often illegal intrusions into the lives of black Americans began more than 75 years ago and often focused on black churches in the South and their ministers. The spying was born of a conviction by top Army intelligence officers that black Americans were ripe for subversion by the German Kaiser and the communists and the Japanese and those people in the anti-war movement who were opposed to the Vietnam War. Can you imagine that? I mean, there's a contradiction in terms. Military intelligence. There's no such thing as military intelligence. At first, the Army intelligence used a reporting network of private citizens that included church members, black businessmen, and black educators. It later employed cadres of infiltrators, wiretaps, and aerial photography by even U-2 spy planes. As the civil rights movement merged with the anti-war protests in the late 60s, many Army units began supplying the sniper rifles and other weapons of war to civilian police departments. Army intelligence began planning for what some officers believed would soon be armed rebellion. By March of 68, King was preparing to lead a march in Memphis in support of striking sanitation workers, and another march a few weeks later, they would swamp Washington, D.C. with people demanding less attention to Vietnam, less money for Vietnam, and more money for the American poor. A February 22, 1968 military intelligence report in King's Army intelligence file states, indications from reliable sources are that King will be in Memphis to support Union City workers striking. In February 68, the 113th Military Intelligence Group at Fort Sheridan, Illinois, outside of Chicago, began supplying the Legion of Justice, a white terrorist group, with tear gas, mace, electronic surveillance equipment, and money to harass anti-war groups. This whole article is out of the Oakland Tribune, and if you'd like a copy, send a donation, whatever you can afford, to help support our work, and we'll send you a copy of this whole article, a tremendous article. Let me read you the last couple of sentences, and you get the flavor of it. The intelligence analysis distributed during a December 12, 1967 conference at the Pentagon described King's plans for the March on Washington as a devastating civil rights disturbance whose sole purpose is to shut down the United States government. The report described King as a Negro who reportedly has preached the message of Hanoi and Peking. Some of the Army's best officers attended that meeting to discuss target city priorities in light of King's plan to, quote, ignite violence and mayhem, end of quote, throughout the United States in April, according to a report on the conference. But the meeting broke up in frustration, one participant said, quoting, looking back, I can remember nobody had any answers, he said. We had all these West Point geniuses who could lead divisions in the Army, but when it came to stopping Dr. Martin Luther King, they didn't have a clue. Nevertheless, Army intelligence intensified its surveillance of King and covertly dispatched Green Beret teams to make street maps of American cities, to identify landing zones for riot troops in American cities, and to scout sniper sites in 35, 39 potentially racially explosive cities. By then, the Army's intelligence system was keenly focused on King and desperately searching for a way to stop him. On April 4th, 1968, King was killed by a sniper's bullet at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, of course, the Oakland Tribune did an excellent article here. It's about 5 pages long when it's on the copy. But they don't ask the crucial questions. You know, if the Green Beret was making street maps of American cities, identifying landing zones, and looking for sniper sites in 35 American cities, the question then becomes, what sniper sites did they locate in Memphis, Tennessee? What reports did the Green Beret issue concerning Memphis, Tennessee? And which Green Beret people were doing the work in Memphis, Tennessee? We want the names of the Green Beret who were in Memphis, Tennessee the day Martin Luther King was killed. We want to know how many of them had rifles, which sniper spots they were at, and who pulled the trigger and sent the bullet crashing through Martin Luther King. Here it is in the Oakland Tribune, confessions right out of the old military intelligence files that it was the Green Beret, the American Green Berets, who killed Dr. Martin Luther King. Okay, that raises another question then. What is James Earl Ray doing in prison? This investigation is continuing and will continue to get hotter. If you'd like copies of this report, please send a donation to Paul Kangas, P.O. Box 4, 22644, San Francisco 94142. I'll be speaking at the New College of the Law on Thursday, April 22nd, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. We'll be doing a special program on King and RFK. That's April 22nd, 5 p.m. at New College of the Law. That's Fell and Market Streets in San Francisco. There's plenty of free parking on the streets. The meters, they stop checking the meters after 6. So that's New College of the Law, April 22nd. By the way, if you would like a copy of this article on the Oakland Tribune, the address to write to is P.O. Box 4, 22644, San Francisco 94142, or you can just call my office at 897-0153, regular business hours, 9 to 5. The phone number again is 897-0153. Or you can write me at P.O. Box 4, 22644, San Francisco, 94142. I'll give you that again. And send a donation, whatever you can afford. You know, $2, $10, $20. And I'll ask for the article out of the Oakland Tribune on Martin Luther King, and I'll send it to you. And I'll send you a bunch more material. The bigger donation you send me, the more material I'll send you. Hey, that address again is P.O. Box 422644, San Francisco, 94142. Now, for something a little lighter. Here are 11 ways for the women listeners. Here are 11 ways, well, for men too, to treat PMS, to ease the symptoms of PMS. One, this is an article out of the San Francisco Examiner. Eat small meals, eat more frequently. They recommend about 7 meals a day, small meals. And vegetables, a lot of vegetables, 7 different vegetable dishes in one day. And keep sugar out of the diet. Next, number 2, avoid empty calories. Stay away from low nutrient foods such as soft drinks and sweets. Number 3, decrease dairy. Eat no more than 1 or 2 portions per day of skim or low-fat milk, cottage cheese, yogurt, especially yogurt. Knock off that yogurt stuff. The lactose in the dairy products can block the body's absorption of the mineral magnesium, which helps regulate the estrogen levels in a woman's body. So yogurt is an enemy to women's bodies. Number 4, ferret out fats. Replace animal foods and fats, such as butter and shortening, with polyunsaturated oils such as corn oil, safflower oil. Any animal foods that you eat contribute to the high estrogen levels that may increase the PMS in your body. So the more animal tissue you eat, the more likely you are to suffer during the PMS. So knock out animal foods, knock out meat, and try more grains and vegetables. It even says that later on. Restrict salt. This is number 5. Go on a low-sodium diet for 7 to 10 days before the onset of your period to offset water retention. This means no restaurant food, no processed food, no Chinese food, no commercial soups, and no bottled salad dressings. Sorry about that, Paul Newman, but it's Paul Newman salad dressing contributes to PMS problems. Fill up with fiber. This is number 6. Fill up with fiber. Fiber helps the body to clear out excess estrogen. Eat plenty of vegetables, eat cooked beans, and eat whole grains. Granola. You know, a bag of granola is a good thing to carry along with you in the car to munch it as you're caught in traffic. Cut the caffeine habit. This is number 7. Consume only limited quantities of coffee. Hey, Knock it all off. Chocolate, forget chocolate, and tea. Except, of course, ginseng tea. Ginseng tea has now been found by doctors in Japan to be one of the great ways you can help your body to fight cancer. Ginseng tea. So knock out the black tea and substitute herbal teas. Number 8 appears to be abstain from alcohol. The depression that often accompanies PMS will be accentuated by alcohol. And alcohol can also worsen PMS headaches and fatigue and cause sugar cravings. Number 9, say no to diuretics. As a temporary anti-bloating measures, diuretics are commonly used by a majority of PMS sufferers. But some over-the-counter diuretics draw valuable minerals out of the system along with the water and so are bad for your body. Number 12, or what is this number? Whatever number we are into. Get more active. Moderate exercise increases your blood flow, relaxes your muscles, and fights fluid retention. Try walking at a fast pace, swimming, jogging. Forget swimming. Well, try. Yeah, swimming is good exercise. Dancing. Yeah, dancing. Hey, that should be number one. Do more dancing, or even karate. Then try and do it on a daily basis, 20 minutes a day. Increase your level of activity for the week or two before PMS symptoms set in. And then the last thing they recommend is sink into a tub to relax the muscles, head to toe. Add a cup of sea salt and a cup of baking soda to the warm water. Soak for 20 minutes. Turn over and do it again. No, it just says soak for 20 minutes. And the article also says, by the way, if you would like copies of this article, write to me. And I'll send you a Xerox copy. Again, send a donation to help cover copying costs and stamps and things like that. Plus a donation just to keep me happy. So this is the article on PMS. Vitamins. I mentioned this article to my listeners because I want to keep my listeners healthy and happy. And while ideas feed the mind, we also have to take care of our bodies. And the goal should be for everybody to live to be 100 years old. And that's what I hope you can do. Now here's some music by Joe Tate. It's a group called Whitewash.
Rodney King and JFK, a whitewash, a hoodwink on the USA. Martin Luther King was murdered too. Another cover-up would make a fool of you. Whitewash, whitewash. You can't cover up what happened to Rodney King, and we know it's our eyes. We should have believed. Died for what we believe, November 22nd, 1963, in a crossfire of bullets while the cameras rolled, and the people heard the shots from the grassy knoll. Now the Warren Commission gave their lengthy report. A lone nut did it all, but he never got to court. But they couldn't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. They couldn't cover up what they did on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash. Yeah, yeah. They can't cover up what we saw on TV. We know it's our eyes, we should have believed. The verdict came in according to plan, with the money set aside for the protesting band. But the protest turned to riots in the maddening crowd, and for what happened next, no one can be proud. The president says the hippies are to blame. If you believe that, you've been whitewashed again. You can't cover up what we saw on TV, and we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. We know it's our eyes, we should have been. We saw JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash. Yeah, it's our eyes, we should have believed. Well, the burning and looting cost 700 mil, but it don't hold a candle to looting the S&Ls. And you talk about the murder and the bodily harm, but they're still busy bragging about Desert Storm. And it happened in Grenada and Panama too. Ask the widows and the orphans about the whitewash they use. You can't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. They can't cover up what we saw on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash. We saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. They can't cover up what we saw on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash. Whoa. They can't cover up what we saw on TV. Now we know it's our eyes, we should have believed. Can't cover up what we saw on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. Can't cover up what we saw on TV. The JFK and Rodney King. You might be black, you might be poor white trash. Can't cover up what we saw on TV. They can't what happened to Rodney King.
Thank you to Joe Tate for his commentary on the news situation in this country today. You can reach the Joe Tate Orchestra at 332-2707 if you're interested in their video on the Rodney King JFK thing. That's 332-2707. Now, here is a headline from 1994, next year. In other words, this is a headline that I'm predicting will be happening in 1994. U.S. debt freeze okayed in Washington, D.C. Clinton's cabinet seeks to effect his blueprint for quelling inflation and stabilizing the economy. The American government, beset by political turmoil arising largely from the country's economic woes, has launched an emergency stabilization program, including a six-month freeze on all debt payments on the national debt. The package was unveiled by Vice President Al Gore, a proponent of radical economic reforms, who was given the additional title of Financial Minister Friday. The new economic steps include urgent measure to curb inflation and prop up America's embattled currency. Among these are a unilateral six-month freeze on debt repayments and limits on the unrestrained credit to industries that both the central bank and the government have been doling out for months. The debt payment freeze is clearly intended as a prod to the group of seven major industrial countries, the holders of most of the $4 trillion debt that the Americans inherited from the Bush-Reagan government. America is seeking long-term rescheduling of the debt, insisting that it can't make the interest payments during the current economic crisis. Now, in case you haven't figured it out by now, this is not a headline story from 1994 or 1995. This is a headline story from March 21st, 1993. In the San Francisco Examiner. And it's not America, it's Russia that has decided to freeze its debt. For years, I've been advocating that the best solution to the debt problem that we face is for the Clinton administration, or any administration, to have a five-year debt moratorium in which no payments are made to any of the debt holders. That is, the multimillionaires who hold these bonds, such as Kathleen Brown, the Secretary of the state of California advocates the sale of more of these bonds to the rich. The rich buy these bonds and then draw the outrageous interest off them, like loan shark operators, and live without working off the interest that they collect. We've got to stop this. In the long run, we have to stop it permanently. Right now, we have to have a 5-year debt moratorium, just like Russia is doing. I'm saying it now in 1993, like I said it in 92, 91, 90, 89, for the last 5 or 6 years, longer than that. And now it's becoming apparent that all over the world, governments are recognizing you can't pay these loan shark operations off. So if you believe that we should do something serious about this crisis, please, please, please write a letter to Vice President Al Gore, 1600 Pennsylvania, or President Clinton, or President Hillary Clinton, and urge them to cancel the national debt. I'm sending a copy of this article out of the newspaper to them to show that not only is Brazil doing it, Israel does it every couple years, and now Russia is having to do it. And in 1993, probably a large percentage of the countries around the world are going to declare a debt moratorium. The bankruptcy rate amongst American citizens is skyrocketing because people just cannot pay these loan shark operations anymore. When Yeltsin meets with Clinton later this year, we should be picketing the federal building, calling for Clinton to emulate the bold moves that Yeltsin's making by declaring a 5-year debt moratorium in this country. This program has been calling for the creation of new music, direct political music, explicit political music, and we've been very effective. And now, again, we're calling for new music to deal with the political crisis in this country. So if you have any rap music dealing with the national debt and how to solve it, if you have any music dealing with the opening the Watergate tapes, please send it and we'll play it. And here's an example of a song we received from a listener.
Good. This piece here is titled Prosecute Bush. Yeah.
Here we go.
Fawn Hall gives good shred. That's what Ollie North said. Hey, I say Bush is a liar. Of course he knew that the so-called National Security Council was dealing with Iran. Bush is one of the council's 4 members. He's a liar and an insult to the American public. Yeah. And there is now proof that during the 1980 presidential campaign, Bush struck a deal with the Iranians to keep the American embassy hostages until after the election. Really, the first arms shipment started in 1981 as payment for keeping 52 Americans hostage for 76 days to be released on the day of Reagan's inauguration, January 20th, 1981. Subverting the election process goes beyond fraud and into treason. And of course he knew about the drugs deals and the arms deal of Noriega. He's been a key player in the drugs and arms racket since his days as head of the CIA. That's 1976. And it continued through the Reagan regime, and it continues still. Hey, Bush and Noriega are in the same gang, folks. This is the gang who brought us crack. And Bush is the one who wants the death penalty for drug felons.
Keep going.
Yeah. Well, I'm not for the death penalty. But I definitely want them prosecuted and convicted of high crimes and to serve hard time for a long, long time A Congress with any backbone could get rid of the whole organization. Yeah, now is the time for statesmanship. Step forward and take your stand in history. Men and women of the United States, you have the power. Use it. Like the dude ain't wearing any clothes. You know what I mean? So there's two main themes I want to re-emphasize. The first is get out and vote. You know, like take part in the action and the passion of the times. Which leads me to my closing statement. For the next few minutes, I want to evoke the spirit of the 60s. Yeah, the enthusiasm for a better world, Earth, a major theme then and now. I want you to join me in a chant. Yeah, one time for the Gipper, so to speak. Show this administration that there's more important things than a top 50 football team. Yeah, they're going to pull the plugs in a second here, so let's do it. Prosecute Bush! 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 Yeah! You got it. You got the idea. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. J.R. Ryan here, the Future Shock Beatnik Band.
And that indeed was J.R. Ryan from Austin, Texas, one of the contributors to this program, who has been working on trying to jail Bush and prosecute Bush since Bush started running for the presidency. So thank you to J.R. Ryan from Austin, Texas. Okay, do you ever wonder what censorship sounds like, real blatant censorship? I was on the Larry King show talking about the role of George Bush in the assassination of John Kennedy, and Larry King kind of cut me off right in the middle of the sentences several times. He didn't want me talking about George Bush's role, but I got a little bit of it out. I thought I'd play it for you. It's sort of interesting stuff. And then we'll get back to the information on Martin Luther King's assassination, this new information that's broken out recently, since this is the anniversary of the King assassination. But here's the Larry King show with me on it.
With Frank Gaffney, we go to San Francisco. Hello.
Hello, Larry King and Frank Gaffney. It's an honor to be on your program.
Thank you. Hello.
I was looking at the historical record, and it seems like the historical record shows that the Bush administration and Bush himself, because of his CIA background, supports the concept of assassination to eliminate problems. There's a new article in the July issue of Spy magazine indicating that George Bush was probably involved in the assassination of President John Kennedy.
All right, let's not. Do you have a question, sir?
Yes.
Spy magazine is not the most reliable of kinds of. Introduce me a normal magazine.
Well, the story was published in Life magazine December 1991. Talking about the Oliver Stone movie JFK, and it indicated that George Bush, with his background in the CIA and the CIA's involvement in the killing of...
George Bush wasn't at the CIA when Kennedy was killed.
Yes, that's what the...
George Bush was... When Kennedy was killed, George Bush was not at the CIA, sir.
Yeah, he was a station chief in Miami.
No, he was not. He was never...
Well, there you have it. Larry King being very protective of George Bush and the CIA. That's curious. And the question it raises is, how does Larry King know, absolutely know, that George Bush was not one of the chief officers of the Central Intelligence Agency station in Miami, by the way, which was the largest CIA base in the United States? How is it that Larry King can be so absolutely positively sure that George Bush was not one of the top officers, whether he was station chief or a commanding officer, or some sort of secret officer at the base? Larry King says it like he knows it. In fact, he's dead wrong. And why he would say it so protective of Bush and the CIA is very curious. Now, here's another curious note that I've come across. I'm reading a book called Kilgallen, the biography of Dorothy Kilgallen by Lee Israel. And the more you read about this period in history, the more interesting facts you find out. You may not be aware of it, and I wasn't until I started writing about this, but Dorothy Kilgallen was killed in November 8th, 1965. Malcolm X was killed February 21st, 1965. And there were seven or eight other key people investigating the assassination of John Kennedy that were killed in 1965. So both Dorothy Kilgallen and Malcolm X were killed in that period. And reading through the Kilgallen work, I discovered another interesting fact. I've seen a lot of stuff over the years on Jack Ruby, but nobody ever said the things about Jack Ruby that Dorothy Kilgallen said about him. It was Dorothy Kilgallen's position, and she was a close confidant of Melvin Belli, Jack Ruby's lawyer, that Jack Ruby was gay. And she says so in her book. And the number of gay people involved in this is very curious. In fact, the number of people that were gay back then is very curious. It seems like everybody knew it, but everybody kept the secret. Everybody was in the closet back then, from J. Edgar Hoover to Jack Ruby. So here's what it says in here. On the day her Oswald story appeared in the journal, Dorothy was summoned to the defense table by Joe Tonahill during a noon recess, the attorney for Jack Ruby. He told her that Jack Ruby wanted to talk with her. This may not have been the first meeting between the New York columnist Dorothy Kilgallen and the accused murderer of Lee Harvey Oswald. Tonahill received the impression that they had seemed to know each other and that they related in a way that bespoke of previous acquaintances. Dorothy and Jack Ruby shook hands at the defense table. She tried to cheer him up by complimenting him on his composure. He said that he would welcome the chance to get out and go to work at a hospital to get well and perhaps do something worthwhile with my life. It occurred to her that anything Ruby might choose to do would be a step up from his former life in Dallas. Dorothy asked Jack Ruby whether he was prepared to face the questions about his sexuality. I'll say that again. Which would undoubtedly be raised at the trial. Jack Ruby replied that he was expecting the issue of his gayness to be broached. He was, after all, a bachelor who referred to his pet Dachshund as his wife. After a couple minutes, Dorothy returned him to his lawyers. Now, I realize the question of a person's sexuality is sensitive, and some people say you have no business prying into that area, whether Jack Ruby was gay or J. Edgar Hoover was gay. You shouldn't be outing them when they're dead. But that's not the question. The question is gayness should be accepted in society, and yet it's hidden and not discussed as an issue. It should be discussed openly if they're trying to keep, quote, trying to keep gays out of the military. We have to point out that, in fact, gay people have existed in the military for eons and have served their role, and there's no reason to discriminate against open gays, while closet gays like Hoover and Jack Ruby get treated differently. And there was one other curious thing in this book about Dorothy Kilgallen, in that 2 days after Dorothy Kilgallen was, well, I'll step back. First, Dorothy Kilgallen interviewed Jack Ruby. And then the next day, she's murdered. And 2 days later, her secretary, Earlene Smith, is murdered. And the notes from the interview with Jack Ruby totally disappear in the process. One of the points an investigator made is that Dorothy Kilgallen always took her earrings off before she retired for the evening, such as tapings. They try to claim that she died of taking sleeping pills and alcohol and accidentally killed herself. Yet Dorothy Kilgallen always took her earrings off before she went to bed. And she was found murdered with her earrings on, indicating she did not voluntarily take the barbiturates and the alcohol into her body that supposedly is what killed her. Now, with those footnotes out of the way, let's go back to examining the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, because the King assassination has been shrouded in a carefully controlled mystery for too long. It's one of the, you know, the assassination of Robert Kennedy is much more clearly a total frame of the guy who's serving time, Sirhan Sirhan. The evidence is just so clear that Sirhan Sirhan could not have killed Robert Kennedy, since he was standing 6 feet, 8 feet, 4 feet, 10 feet in front of Robert Kennedy, yet all the bullets entered Robert Kennedy point blank from the rear. I took the time to locate the man who actually shot Robert Kennedy and killed him. Let's be charitable, let's say accidentally put a gun to the back of Robert Kennedy's head, pulled the trigger, and then dropped the gun down underneath Robert Kennedy's arm from behind and shot twice more through Robert Kennedy's body. I actually located the guy and interviewed him. But in the case of Martin Luther King, the assassination was pulled off by Green Beret and military intelligence snipers so effectively and that we were not able to get as much information. Only recently now, with the publication Sunday of the Oakland Tribune, earth-shaking blockbuster story of how the military intelligence sent Green Beret teams traveling around following Martin Luther King plus preceding Martin Luther King, going ahead of Martin Luther King to cities where they expected he might show up and looking for sniper sites to shoot King from. I'm not making this up. This was a story published in the Oakland Tribune last Sunday, March 21st, 1993. And if you'd like a copy of it, please send, write me, Paul Kangas at P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. And if you have any comments or criticisms of this program, also please put them in writing and send them on to that P.O. Box. I'll give it to you again. It's P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. Because if you don't put it in writing, I can't take it too serious. And also, if you'd like a copy of this article out of the Oakland Tribune, send a donation to cover copying costs, mailing costs, my time. Please, it's appreciated and necessary if you want a copy of it. The only people that I have been sending free materials to are the prisoners who write me from prisons like San Quentin. I've received a number of letters from prisons all over the Bay Area, requests for information about this stuff. And so if there's any prisoner at any jail anywhere within sound of my voice that wants a copy of the Oakland Tribune article on how the Green Beret snipers killed Dr. Martin Luther King, please write to me and I'll send it to you, even if you don't send a donation. On the other hand, those of you out in the, quote, free world, those of you that are not locked up as tightly as the people in San Quentin, consider that fact, that I get requests from people in prison, and I function providing them with the information. So whenever you send a donation, please send about three times as much as you think the information is worth to cover my costs for sending out materials to prisoners. Again, the address to write for a copy of this article is P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. Now think about this. The patsy that they have framed for the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King was in prison before he escaped. And then instead of heading for the hills or hiding out as low and as quietly as possible, what does this guy do allegedly? Why, he starts following one of the most famous political leaders in the United States around the country and somehow in the process buys a rifle, not too hard, comes up with $20,000 in cash. That's not easy back in 1968. $20,000 is a lot of money. And there's no known robberies or burglaries that he committed to get the money. There, it's never been properly explained where James Earl Ray came up with all the money. You have to remember, after he allegedly assassinated King, he then traveled from Memphis, Tennessee to Canada and lived there in luxury for a while, and then traveled to England where he lived in luxury, and then traveled to Portugal where he was living in luxury in a villa where he was, quote, captured before the charade continued, and he was then paraded before the media as the, quote, assassin of Dr. Martin Luther King. If you believe that he killed Dr. Martin Luther King, I have a bridge that I would like to talk to you about you buying from me, because there's no way he did it. What the American intelligence and military intelligence folks have the ability to do, it's called, like Hollywood character typecasting. That is, they go and look for somebody that fits the bill. Now, what about James Earl Ray's background fits the bill that would make him a prime suspect to work as a patsy so he gets better conditions while he's doing time? Well, for one thing, his brother, Jerry Ray, is a member of a national states' rights fascist-like organization that publishes a right-wing anti-black publication called Thunderbolt that calls for sending black people back to Africa and other kinds of craziness like that. So it's easy for the media to slander James Earl Ray as a racist, and so that racists like George Bush look good compared to the slander the media will throw at somebody like James Earl Ray or his brother Johnny Ray. But here's the problem with that approach, is that James Earl Ray was never politically involved with his brother Jerry Ray, and James Earl Ray had never been known to use guns. He wore glasses, had poor vision, and you know how he got into prison? He got into prison by robbing a gas station with a pocket knife, not an Uzi, you know, but a pocket knife. And then as he was driving away from the gas station, he turned a corner sharply, and the door swung open on his car. He fell out of the car, clunked his head on the sidewalk, and was found unconscious laying there when the police showed up trying to arrest the person who robbed the gas station. So James Earl Ray is a real clown when it comes to criminal activity, conspiracy, planning, and pulling off high-level things. He couldn't even pull off a gas station robbery successfully. Now you're going to sell me that this guy tracked and followed and stalked one of the most important political figures in the 20th century, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and assassinated him and then got away and didn't get caught. And he must have been real lucky. James Earl Ray must have been real lucky to have won, known where Martin Luther King was going to be staying, because nobody knew where Martin Luther King was going to be staying in Memphis. Nobody. Except for military intelligence. Andrew Young registered Martin Luther King at the Lorraine Motel just hours before the assassination. So the only way somebody could have known, James Earl Ray would have had to have a phone tap on Andrew Young's telephone. And that's the only way he could have got the information. Then James Earl Ray got real lucky in another aspect. He got a hotel room that overlooked the balcony where Martin Luther King would be standing momentarily. Talk about luck. That's incredible luck that I don't believe. So slowly the facts are coming out on the King assassination. Now, here's some more luck James Earl Ray had. When he traveled to Canada, he somehow stole passports from four actual Toronto, Canada citizens, two of whom were police officers. He somehow stole their passports without anybody noticing the passports were stolen. Passports were never reported stolen. And then he was able to duplicate them and get the passports back into the houses of the four residents in Canada without them noticing their passports had been stolen and duplicated. This doesn't sound like a two-bit burglar from Tennessee. In fact, one more point. James Earl Ray had never been in Memphis in his life. And so for him to do all the coordination and planning and get the right place and time and everything is further. But back to the passports. He then somehow stole four passports, copied them, and got them back into the homes of the people. And it turns out the four passports just happened to all be individuals, including two police officers, who had the same height and weight and skin color as James Earl Ray. Now, does that sound like a coincidence? Four passports, all with the same height and weight and skin color as James Earl Ray. I mean, if you had to go to Canada and try and steal passports as part of your escape plan, what do you think the chances are that you could steal the passport of somebody that happens to be the same height and weight and skin color as you are and looks somewhat like you? Now do that four times over. Give me a break. You know, this is more, what this is more fingerprints of military intelligence and the CIA on the case of the assassination of Martin Luther King. That didn't happen the way the media portrays it. Not at all. This was totally a CIA operation from the beginning to the end. And according to the article in the Oakland Tribune, the military intelligence had been trailing the King family for 75 years. They had been following them, and Hoover had been tape recording Martin Luther King's speeches, telephone calls, and bedroom activity for years. Now I can see it now. J. Edgar Hoover and his lover, Clyde Tolson, sitting in their bedroom, listening to tapes of Dr. Martin Luther King talking in his bed with his wife. And it just sounds very interesting. I don't know what the FBI is up to today in 1993, but I have a funny feeling they're doing the same thing. Now, James Earl Ray had some additional help in Memphis, Tennessee. It seems that the 12-person FBI police detail that was assigned to guard Dr. Martin Luther King in Memphis was ordered, disbanded, down to two individuals just before King was shot. Why, what an interesting coincidence. And guess who the chief of the police in Memphis was? He was Frank Holloman, director of the Memphis Police Department and director of the Memphis Fire Department, and a former high-ranking FBI agent of 25 years. Now, he's the one that arranged all these things. And he, James Earl Ray had some additional help from this former FBI agent, in that there was a fire station next door to the Lorraine Motel. And at it was working two black firemen. Well, Holloman ordered the two black firemen transferred across town to another fire station for one day, just coincidentally, on the same day that Dr. Martin Luther King was shot. And in the process, when the Memphis chief of police ordered this one black FBI agent, a man named Ed Reddit, to go home and to leave his guard duties guarding Dr. Martin Luther King, Reddit argued against going home. And so then Reddit was taken home by Memphis police and ordered to stay out of the way. Now, some of these footnotes that I'm giving you are useful. They're useful like a benchmark. You watch the stories that appear in the masked media about the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King and notice how they're these kind of general weeping stories. There's no investigation goes on. The mass media doesn't want you investigating this. So what I would suggest is don't trust what I'm saying. You've probably got a tape recorder tape recording this program, hopefully, so you'll have the evidence. And then you take the evidence and you try and verify what I'm saying. Or you try and add new material. But it's important that each individual participate in this investigation. I wasn't born with any special knowledge. I wasn't an eyewitness. So what I'm doing is researching the facts and analyzing them. Everybody that has taken a look at these cases has been able to see something that nobody else has seen. I'm one of the first persons in the United States to have been able to put together an analysis of all of the assassinations, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X. You can read any book you want to on the assassinations. None of the other books are going to mention the connection of Malcolm X to the assassination of John Kennedy. They're probably not going to mention Dorothy Kilgallen's assassination after she interviewed Jack Ruby. And if they do, they sure will not mention the death of Dorothy Kilgallen's secretary, who died 2 days after Dorothy Kilgallen was killed. You see, my analysis is different because I just happen to be a different person, and yours will be too. So I encourage you to participate in this investigation, to participate in the research. It will turn you into a journalist. It will turn you into an investigator. Hey, in the world has a shortage of good journalists and good investigators. So if you're 17 years old and wondering what to do with your life, all you have to do is start doing something now that produces in yourself a useful skill, like journalism or investigations, and you will turn yourself into a great journalist, a great investigator. Remember, when you die and you pass away, the world will not judge you by what you took from the world while you lived here. The world will judge you by what you gave back to the world. So one of the ways you can give back to the world more good than you took from the world is to become a journalist.
According to the ancient Chinese proverb, a journey of 1,000 miles must begin with a single step. My fellow Americans, let us take that first step.
All right. That was a group called Latent Image, the Mystery Cult. And they did a song called Cover Up. The last lines, in case you missed it, were Nixon did it, did it, did it. Nixon did it, did it, did it. And thank you. This has been Reality Sandwich, the continuing investigation of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, Dorothy Kilgallen, Lee Bowers, especially Lee Bowers. I mean, Lee Bowers is so important to understanding all these things. Without his efforts, we would not be half as far as we had. But to that supervisor of the Union Pacific Railroad Yard, we salute you, an American hero, Lee Bowers. You helped us to understand this mess. Thank you. And this has been your host, Paul Kangas. This program on radio station KPOO purely and merely expresses the opinions of Paul Kangas and his guests, and in no way reflects station policy of radio station KPOO right here in San Francisco. All right. Again, if you want to contact me, write to me at P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142, especially if you have any music, political music, explicitly political music. It's not polite to not be political anymore. It's just not politically correct to not be political. So I'm looking for political music. P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. Or you can call my office at 897-0153.